Good afternoon and welcome to Ask the Vet. My name's Beth Broom and I'm going to be your host today. I have in the studio with me Dr. Liz Foster. Good afternoon, Liz.
Morning, Beth.
Good. I think you're a little off on that. Did you need another cup of coffee?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
As do I. Or maybe it's time for whiskey. I think it is 5 o'clock.
Yeah, it is 5 o'clock.
Somewhere. Anyway, I just want to remind everyone, this is a call-in show. So if you have any questions for Dr. Foster, please call 963-2976. Any animal-related questions, it doesn't have to be regarding our topic for today, which I was wanting to talk to you about parasites.
Oh.
I feel like there should be a dun-dun-dun. Like worms.
Bugs.
And nasty stuff.
Ew.
Yeah. But it's springtime. Finally, here in the mountains. And with spring comes all sorts of nastiness. You know, dogs and cats are out getting into things, eating all the dead carcasses that have been hidden under the snow all winter long and are thawing out. And with that comes all sorts of nasty parasites. Talk to me about... are there lots of parasites?
Yes.
Lots of different kinds. I mean, I think we're lucky here in the mountains of Colorado mm-hmm. that we don't have quite the parasite and nasty load of infectious things that, you know, like the South has. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, what kind of parasites are people looking for?
So the easy ones to find usually are the ones on the outside. So fleas and ticks.
Okay.
So you are right in that we don't have such a problem here compared to other places in the country, even Denver.
Right.
But gosh, do we have a lot of ticks. And not so much fleas, but mm-hmm. they are here. And we worry about ticks because, well, they're gross, number one.
That's the one bug that makes me wanna,
gosh, they're
like,
nasty.
My skin crawl.
Yeah. And, but also, even though we don't have Lyme disease in Colorado, we have things called Anaplasma, Ehrlichia, Rocky Mountain spotted fever. All these things are carried by ticks.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. And they're gross. So all it takes is one tick, one bite, and your dog can technically, or cat, be infected. More common in dogs, I would think. So that's a reason to get them on a preventative, just in the summer months.
And what months are those? When do they start coming out? When is it an issue?
So I like to say May through October. It's what, mid-May?
I've definitely pulled some ticks off dogs.
I was going to say
already.
I mean, I think we heard today somebody saying that she pulled 2 or 3 ticks off a dog a month ago or something. So
yeah.
May through October is a good general idea. Basically, as soon as the snow melt starts, I think you can see some ticks.
Got it.
Yeah, they're just gross. And ticks love moist areas, like if you're walking through tall grass and mm-hmm. it's wet and stuff like that. Ticks love that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. And any, you know, there's always that old, like, what do? We find a tick. Mm-hmm. Do you pull it off yourself? Do you take it into the vet? Do we, like, light a match or something?
Oh,
do
gosh.
I, like, flush it down a sink? What am I supposed to do with that?
So I wouldn't light a match. I think that's more of an old wives' tale kind of thing. I just worry about you or the animal getting bit. But if you're confident...
You worry about me?
I do.
Aww,
a lot. Every
thank
day.
You.
Every night.
That is, thank
yeah.
you.
So I think that if you're confident pulling the tick out, absolutely pull it out. Don't leave it on there because then you can lose it or whatever. But...
And is it possible to somehow leave the head of the tick behind?
Sure, sure. Yeah. I mean, you can. We worry that if some part of the tick is left behind, it could create like a skin infection. I don't normally see that. We don't see that too much. Mm-hmm. If you're not confident pulling the tick off or it just grosses you out too much, just bring it in and we will do it for you. I'm sure any vet in the area would be happy to do that.
And do they need to bring the tick in once it's been pulled off?
You can.
I've seen that a lot.
Yeah. So you stick it in like a pill jar or stick it in a cup of water or whatever. Bring it in because... Animal people, veterinary people love to look at things and identify where it came from and identify the type of thing. And we could probably tell you what kind of tick it is and what it may be carrying.
Mm-hmm.
So again, if you're feeling froggy, do that, and we can give you some information on it.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So, and just to remind everyone, this is a call-in show. Dr. Foster is here in the office from Alpine Animal Hospital. And the studio phone number here is 963-2976. Here in the studio. I think I said it's here in the office. That's just
somebody else's office. I don't know. Not our office.
Sorry, it's not our office. So then, okay, so we talked about ticks. Let's talk about fleas. Mm. I've heard, after being around here for a while, that there are not a ton of fleas here. But we do have fleas, correct?
Correct. We do have fleas. Not a ton, but they're here, and they're gross.
They are, yeah.
And fleas carry... Fleas disease. Can carry disease as well. Mm-hmm. So fleas can carry tapeworms.
Oh, we have a call.
Oh, no way.
Oh, wow. 1 second. Hello. Thanks for calling.
Hi, is this Beth?
Yes.
Hi, Beth. It's Karen Bristol.
How are you?
Bandit. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. What can I do for you today?
I just happened to have the radio on and heard this was your show. I'm perfect so excited. Timing. So your guest, I was wondering if she had any thoughts about preventive medicines for ticks in a dog that does have seizures.
Oh, that's a good question. Dr. Foster, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Karen. So
you want me to hang up and you'll answer? Or
no, it doesn't matter. Do you have more? You can stay on the line for a minute.
Yeah, you can stay on the line.
Okay.
So the medications that we use are typically pretty safe. You know, there are some dewormers out there that used to be used, or they're still sometimes used in larger animals, sometimes used in small animals for certain things that are not safe for dogs with seizures. So it's a really good question. The preventatives that we use, we like the oral ones. Are you using one, Karen?
I think we used it years ago. NexGard?
Okay.
Yeah, I think NexGard's still around.
Yes, but I'm afraid to use it because this boy has seizures monthly, one a month.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And I'm afraid of anything toxic. That's why I'm asking the question.
Right.
Yeah, that's understandable. So I think one of the safer ways of going about it would be considering the oral once a month thing. We use a product called Simparica, and it works great. I think that you should talk it over with your vet to be sure that there aren't any other concerns around either your dog personally using that that product in your dog and any other medications he could be on. But yes, we absolutely have safe products for dogs with seizures or any other disease. Yes, I would 100% still recommend they be on something.
So it's worth the risk is what you're saying.
I think it's worth the risk. Yes, okay. Flea and tick preventatives have a bad rap from a long time ago that's one of the side effects is causing neurological things, but we have come a long way. So I think it's just talk it over with your vet and you guys can come up with a plan together. But 100%, I think it's important to prevent those things. And if you're going to try anything, a more holistic or natural approach, you know, we also are here to support you in that. But just maybe run those approaches by your vet before trying them because there's always something that we can use.
Awesome. Thanks, okay. Karen.
Perfect. All right. You gals take care.
Okay.
You too.
Bye now.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Wonderful. So just to remind everyone, this is a call-in show. Dr. Foster is here in the studio. I want to make sure I say that right. And, you know, any vet-related questions, 963-2976. So I know we talked about fleas, talked about ticks, and let's talk about intestinal parasites, all those nasty, creepy, crawly things. You know, one of my first questions is, I know I frequently hear people say, my dog keeps scooting his butt, and so he must have worms. What is that a thing?
Not really. I don't want to say 100% that every dog that scoots their bum doesn't have worms, but
seems not common.
It's not very common. Yeah. Usually, if a dog is scooting their behind, that means that they need their anal glands expressed,
mm-hmm. which or is they have an itchy butt,
or they have an itchy butt. It could mean that if they're excessively doing it, right. I think if you notice it more often, then that's probably what it is, and that's usually, knock on wood, a pretty simple fix.
Right.
But it usually does not mean worms.
Right. So don't run to the co-op and get some over-the-counter dewormer. Mm-hmm. Likely you're not, it's not what you need.
Yeah, it's not going to fix the problem.
Right.
You just need a quick visit to your veterinary office. We're happy to help you out with that, and we can get you on your way. But that's usually not worms.
And if you see, you know, so the other thing is a lot of times I've also heard the common statement, I don't think he has worms. I haven't seen anything.
Mm. That's another good question. So we don't always see the worms, and we don't always have diarrhea or vomiting from worms. So it just depends on the life stage of the worm and the eggs and all that rigmarole. So, you know, it's not a bad idea for certain animals to deworm them on occasion. Cats, we do it in a lot if they're hunters. Even if the cat doesn't eat what they're hunting, they're still coming in contact with it. And we see a lot of tapeworms and icky stuff from that. And then with dogs, if they're just being dogs and getting into stuff and walking around and doing dog stuff, they're always exposed to that kind of thing.
So. Right. So it's a risk.
It's a risk. It's something to be more concerned about, I think, if you have kids at home, young kids at home, who don't know any better, to stay away from, you know, parts of the dog that might be carriers of the worm or might be, you know, not worm free or egg free. So it's also important if you've got elderly people who have animals, just deworming those animals on a routine basis.
It's pretty easy. I mean, it's just a tablet. You hand it over, hide it in something yummy. They eat it.
Typically very safe for the animal as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, are there any parasites, intestinal parasites particularly, that human or that you would see, that you would see coming out of the animal? Like, I know I have a a little disgusting story.
Oh, neat.
Oh, yeah. I remember before I worked in animal medicine, I was visiting a friend down south, Louisiana, and she had a new puppy, and I thought it was the cutest puppy. Pug. A pug puppy. Your favorite.
Yeah, my favorite.
My favorite, by the way. And I wanted him to sleep with me in the bed because he was really adorable.
Of course.
And I kept waking up in the morning, and there was little bits of rice all around me, and I didn't understand.
So disgusting. Gross.
I didn't understand what this was. Gross. I wish I could say I was a small child at the time, and I was not.
It was last year.
Oh, God, not quite. But every morning for days, I'd wake up and I'd clean all the rice out of the bed, and I was like, what's going on? I didn't find out until obviously years later, working in veterinary medicine, that I was sleeping in dead parasites.
Yeah. Those are tapeworms. Yeah. Those are tapeworms.
Yeah.
So the more common ones we see coming out of a dog, and it could be coming out the front or the hind end, tapeworms. Tapeworms look like segments of rice when they are separate. But if you put them all together, it looks like a long
worm.
It's gross, with like little segments on it. And then a round worm is exactly what it sounds like. It looks like a round worm. It's like a super thin earthworm. They can get super long.
The ones that look like spaghetti.
Yeah, they look like a big pile of spaghetti. Dogs can throw them up. They can have them come in their poop. And yeah, those are the ones we see more commonly.
Yeah.
There are other worms out there, but the way to detect those typically is in when we have a poop sample. So
right,
hookworms.
What would you say an animal looks like that has parasites that are untreated? Is there anything to look for externally? Just, you know, how's my dog or cat doing?
Yeah. So a lot of the times, again, we do not always see the live worms coming out of them. We don't see the eggs. So if you have a dog or a cat that's chronically throwing up, chronically having just abnormal stools, like one day they'll have a normal one, the next day you're like, gosh, that just doesn't look right. If their appetite is waxing and waning, just overall not quite right.
Like a poor hair coat.
Poor
or
hair coat
thin.
Can be something that, like thin. We don't see this that often up here.
No, south.
I think our residents are really good about being aware of this for the most part. But yeah, in the south, you'll see thin dogs, really unkempt, poor mm-hmm. hair coat, just look really icky. I mean, mm-hmm. even recently, we had a puppy come in a couple weeks ago that...
she came from down south, I believe.
She did. And mom had had her for, what, a month or something. But she had just chronic, very subtle GI signs, meaning mm-hmm. like a little bit of puking here and there, mm-hmm. just not quite eating as well as mom wanted. Mm-hmm. Well, she had hookworms. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it could be really subtle things, too.
Right.
So it's not something... GI signs, gastrointestinal signs in an animal... are not something to ignore.
Right. That's good information. Mm-hmm. That's good information. Just to remind everyone, this is a call-in show. So any vet-related questions, please give us a call here, 963-2976. So the ever so, I don't know, controversial topic? That's not a good word for it, but heartworm.
Mm. That's a good one.
Yeah. Heartworm is... It's a parasite. Now, first of all, if you would please explain what heartworm is and how it's contracted.
Okay. So heartworm is a worm. Mm-hmm. It looks similar to a bowl of spaghetti when we have too many of them. And it lives in the heart. Mm-hmm. So it actually lives in the pulmonary artery of a dog. Okay. And that is one of the arteries that comes off of the heart, one mm-hmm. of the blood vessels. Mm-hmm. And the potential is that this worm can clog up this artery mm-hmm. and cause a dog to go into heart failure. And heart failure can mean exercise intolerance. It could mean... a lot more than that, too. It can mean a lot of very, very sick dog. So the way that heartworms are contracted by a dog is a mosquito. So mosquitoes carry the larva that turns into the worm.
Okay. And we do have mosquitoes. We have mosquitoes here.
We have mosquitoes here.
Funny.
Once a mosquito that's infected bites a dog, there's potential that they give the heartworm to the dog. Mm-hmm. And if the heartworm is allowed to develop into an adult, it can be very, very dangerous to that dog.
Okay.
And yes, we have mosquitoes here. Is our heartworm risk as high as the South or even Denver, Grand Junction, other warmer places? No, our risk is not as high. However, it is there.
Mm-hmm.
I have, over the past several years, I've treated a handful of animals with heartworm disease. And I'd say at least 50% of those animals were residents of these valleys.
Their entire life?
Yes. And they did not travel and they came mm-hmm. here. And, you know, it's an unfortunate thing and it's a rare thing, but it happens.
Because I know it's a common question. Does my dog need to be on mm-hmm. heartworm prevention? So heartworm prevention is a once a month mm-hmm. Oral, I believe, generally always oral medication.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I know for the longest time, the recommendation was that it's not necessary here if mm-hmm. your animal doesn't travel out of the valley. But now through the years, I've heard that change. So why I said a bit controversial. I mean, not really, but.
Well, it's just, you know, I think the newer opinions, newer meaning the past like 10 years or so, we're heading towards recommending heartworm prevention to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think the risk is low here. So.
Sure.
I like to give people the option. If you truly are not traveling anywhere outside of this area, I think it's reasonable to not put them on heartworm prevention, understanding that there is still a small risk. Now, if you're traveling even to Denver.
Or Grand Junction.
Grand Junction. I mean, I do think it's best to put them on, mm-hmm. again, because your risk is there. We were talking about this on the way over. I am risk averse. I do not like risk things.
And I am a risk taker.
Exactly. So I think it all depends on how you look at it, too. And it spills over into my recommendations. I can't
help it. Of
course. And so.
Well, and it's becoming more and more. I mean, the newer veterinarians that I've worked with, mm-hmm. I mean, it's becoming not just you risk averse people, but it's becoming more. In favor.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that it's nice because it's the cheapest way to deworm your dog once a month. So mm-hmm. not only is it preventing heartworm, but it is deworming them for roundworms, hookworms, and one of the more common types of intestinal parasites and tapeworms. So it's an easy way to kind of cover your bases.
Are there any negatives to taking heartworm prevention? You know, there was a time when border collies mm-hmm. shouldn't be taking things with certain ivermectin drugs in mm-hmm. them, things like that. Is there any dog breed in particular, or any reason not to use heartworm prevention?
It's a good question. So, yeah, absolutely. So a lot of the times, 10, 20 years ago, all of our heartworm preventatives only had ivermectin in them. Mm-hmm. Ivermectin is a very common horse and cattle dewormer.
Yeah.
A lot of ranchers just have it.
Right.
Now, these days, we have so many different options that do not have ivermectin in them.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean, you do not want to give an ivermectin anything to border collies, collies. There's a list of a lot of the cattle breed dogs.
Yeah, Aussie type.
And that still goes. You don't want to give that to them. But
that's not what we're using these days.
Exactly. At least at our hospital, and I think at a lot of hospitals, we use a product that does not carry ivermectin. It does not have ivermectin in it, and very safe. I have two cattle dogs at home, both of which take the heartworm prevention, and I am not worried about them at all.
Okay, that's good. That's good information, because I think that there was a time, and people probably still think of that and remember that. And, you know, obviously nobody wants to give something as a prevention that causes harm.
Right, so. Right. And I think it's a good question to ask your vet. Hey, can we make sure that this is a safe one for this breed dog? And
right.
Ask your vet these questions, because we are making these recommendations in the best interest of your animal. We really want to make sure that you're comfortable too.
And I mean, heartworm left, I believe you said this, but heartworm left untreated is a fatal disease.
It can be. Yeah, absolutely. It can be fatal. And the treatment for it.
Yeah, do we talk about controversial? Do we go down the road of treatment for heartworm?
Well, I mean, I think if you're doing the traditional treatment that a lot of vets want to do, it can also be something that can be expensive.
Yep.
And it can be scary to some people.
Mm-hmm.
So why not just prevent it?
Right, right. That said, if you ever adopt a dog, say from down south or somewhere else that has heartworm disease, I mean, there is a treatment, and we have had a lot of success with it. And there's a lot of ways to treat heartworm. Well, there's a couple ways to treat heartworm disease. So just make sure you educate yourself. You know, let your veterinarian give you a lot of information on that before you make your choice on how you want to treat your pet.
Yeah, because if they do have it, there's no reason that we can't get rid of it.
Absolutely. Okay, well, that's good. So in regards to springtime issues, any recommendations for the listener on things they should be looking out for or worried about? I mean, especially now we also are getting heat coming into the summertime.
Yeah.
And heat-related issues, anything there?
So, I mean, as we get warmer, I mean, even today, I would be very wary of leaving a dog in a car, obviously.
Yeah.
And this is, unfortunately, something we have to deal with all the time.
You
know, it's not going to go away.
No.
And so, you know, be careful of leaving your dog in the car when you're at the dog park or exercising your dog. Be very wary of exercise intolerance or heat intolerance.
Right, because just like us, I mean, some dogs handle the heat better. And obviously, breed predispositions.
Absolutely. There are breed predispositions. If you have a dog with a smush face, bulldogs.
The pug.
My
favorite. I love that pug.
Any of those guys, they are going to be more predisposed to getting overheated. And so be aware of the signs in your dog of them being in distress. Dogs are not going to limit themselves until they're about to keel over.
Yes.
Keel over meaning sometimes just pass out. So we're going to have to implement those limitations on them so that they can be out there having fun, but also being safe. Have water around for them. Don't let them overdo it.
I feel like I should do a public service announcement. Every year I see dogs go up Red Hill as a Mushroom Rock area, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with because you don't live over here. But it's a nice, lovely hike run, and it's that red dirt. A lot of it's exposed to the sun, and I just want to make sure people are aware that not only breathing and panting and the sun beating down on them makes them hot, but I've actually, you know, that ground gets very hot on their feet.
Oh, yeah.
People don't think about that, but you see your dog run from shade spot to shade spot. You ever touch that red dirt when it's been sitting out in the sun? It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things to consider. Their feet aren't ready for that, potentially.
Mm-hmm.
And real quick, because I know we're going to wrap it up, but what is, if your dog is starting to overheat, maybe one of the best things you can do? What is one of the fastest ways to help cool your pet off?
Okay, so get them in the shade. Don't force them to lay down. Just force them to stop moving around. Don't let them walk anymore. Don't let them run. You can put cool water water if you have it. Dump it on places where blood vessels are exposed. So think inside of the ears, think on the belly, get their paws wet. They mm-hmm. sweat through their paws. Offer them water. Don't let them chug it. Mm-hmm. And then get them to a vet if you're concerned.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. I know we tend to put like alcohol on their feet. I mean, I don't know if that's something people should be doing.
I don't know
who walks around with a bottle of alcohol.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't normally walk around with a bottle of that kind of alcohol.
Not that kind of alcohol.
No, but, you know, that's for another day to talk about.
That's right.
Yeah.
Let's see. I guess I'm about to wrap it up here, but just remember, Ask the Vet is on once a month, the third Thursday of every month, and don't ask me who's going to be with me next week or next month, but I'll be here to host that show. And thank you so much. Have a good afternoon.